And our goal during this season, as we've been talking about the concept of simply Jesus, is to just get back to the original. Just push the other things out of our way. Just get back to Jesus. So in that spirit, I want to drill down on one sentence of the Bible found in Colossians chapter 1, verse 15. May sound familiar to you. You probably don't even need to look it up because you'll be able to remember it. One sentence. Jesus is the image of the invisible God. He is the image of the invisible God. So let's think about why that might be useful information. If you want to know God, you can. If you want to know what he's like, look at Jesus. See what he's like. He's the image of the invisible God. If you want to know what's important to God, you can. Look and see what's important to Jesus. He's the image of the invisible God. If you want to know what's not important to God, look at what wasn't important to Jesus. Look at the things that he resisted. He's the image of the invisible God. If you want to know, am I on the right track? Am I following God? Am I truly doing what I think I'm doing? Am I on the right track here? Look at Jesus. Are you emulating his example? Because if you are, then yes, you are. You are on the right track. If you're looking for solid advice, look at the words of Jesus, because he is the image of the invisible God. And you could also go the opposite direction with it. I probably shouldn't pretend that I know God apart from looking at Jesus and knowing what Jesus is like. I don't know what's important to God if I don't understand what's important to Jesus. We're definitely not on the right track if I'm not following the example of Jesus. And I probably shouldn't take spiritual input that isn't informed by the life and the teachings of Jesus. Why? Because he is the image of the invisible God. Who is this Jesus? He's the image of the invisible God. A life that truly honors God has a simple formula: internalize and emulate the life and teachings of the original, of Jesus Christ. Jesus came to make it simple. But doesn't that sound just a little bit too simple? I mean, just follow me? Doesn't that sound like maybe that's a little bit too easy? Well, I think the question is it too simple, or do we just complicate things? If you came from a background that had a lot of maybe rules, a lot of consequences for not following the rules, a lot of expectations, follow me might sound a little too simple. Well, God gives us, thank him so much for this, he gives us a clear picture of what his plans are. Back in Colossians chapter 1 and verse 9, he paints a really clear picture for us. It says, God has now revealed to us his mysterious will regarding Christ. His will is to fulfill his own good plan, and this is the plan. At the right time, he will bring everything together under the authority of Christ, everything in heaven and on earth. What does God want? What's his plan? What's he doing? He's bringing everything back into unity under the authority of Christ. Remember we talked about the story, and way back in January, we were in Genesis 1:1, and we talked about the creation story, and when God got done creating, he declared everything to be very good. What's God's plan? He's bringing everything back to being very good under the authority of Christ. And guess what? He's given you a piece. He's given the Hunsakers a piece, a specific time and place and people group that need to be reached. And he's given you a piece of that puzzle as well. He's given us all a place in the story. Keeping our minds focused on Jesus, it keeps our lives aligned with that plan. It only gets complicated when I shift my affection and my attention elsewhere. When I have disregard for Jesus, then it starts to get really complicated. So, if you've been following Jesus for a lengthy period of time, you know, the number's sort of arbitrary, but let's just say longer than you haven't been. Okay, if you've been following Jesus for a lengthy period of time, you may have noticed a cycle that when your eyes are pointed toward Jesus, regardless of your circumstance, life has a way of working itself out. Things in life seem to come to meaningful conclusions. Things seem to work themselves out. And you probably noticed the opposite is also true, that chaos ensues when Jesus isn't on the forefront. Life gets a lot more complicated, and we become a lot less effective at sharing the gospel, sharing the good news with others, when we complicate the message. Getting sidetracked by theological peripheral issues. I enjoy the heck out of those debates, but I actually have started avoiding them because I don't want to get sucked in too far. Sometimes maybe we get sucked in by correcting the behavior of others, and sometimes even correcting our own behaviors. We can get sucked in by that. And then our relationship with God becomes lifeless because we're so focused there. So I'll give you a good example. I was in the hospital. I mean, I wasn't in the hospital. I was at the hospital in Edmonds, Washington, a couple of weeks ago. My wife works in some medical administration. She had to go there for something. She was there most of the day, and I was kind of early coming back to pick her up. So I'm just sitting in the lobby of the hospital. And there was a woman on the phone. I'm going to say she was maybe 60-ish, you know, give or take. 10 years either way. Just so you got a visual. It's important because she was on the phone with her daughter, who was also an adult. And I know this because even though she was holding the phone right here, it was on speakerphone, so everyone could hear the entire conversation. And I was in there for like 40 minutes. And they were on the phone the entire time. So this was like involved. I know them really well at this point. Both of the two women in this conversation had postured themselves. The mom, who was in the room with me, she had postured herself as kind of like the wise old sage. As I started like reflecting on the conversation, I actually took to calling her Yoda. She probably wasn't as wise as Yoda, but she definitely had positioned herself to be perceived as wise as Yoda. And the daughter had really postured herself as the victim. And just mistreated by every single person that they had talked about. Because this was 40 minutes of gossip. Just one situation to the next. Everyone was just completely abusive and mistreating the daughter and her children. And it occurred to me that maybe there was a common thread in each of those situations, but I didn't offer that up. So it's just going on and on. Eventually they come around to their church. You know, I picked up on the fact that they were Christians because the mom had sort of tried to, like, use a few pieces of something that resembled scripture along the way. But the conversation came around to a group of ladies at church who were just really rude and unkind to the daughter and to her children. And now I know that church ladies would never be rude to another church lady. I mean, I think that's just ridiculous. It would never happen. Anyway, so she's having this conversation. But then the daughter made a statement that was kind of interesting to me. She said, you know, the church says, come as you are, and that's okay for the first time, but the second time, they're going to try to change you. I thought, yeah, that's kind of interesting. There probably is a little bit of a contradiction there. Maybe we should just be open about the changing part, like right up front. But okay. Thankfully, Yoda was there to set the record straight. She said, well, they obviously don't understand that God's a gentleman. He doesn't try to change you. He just loves you as you are. And I thought, huh. Like, I literally almost interjected into the conversation at this point. But it occurred to me that they had been sucked down a rabbit hole. And it sounded really spiritual, but it was actually leading in the exact opposite direction of Jesus. Like, they were going the wrong direction, thinking they were in the right. And so I just thought about that statement. Okay, well, first of all, like, God's not a gentleman. He's God. He's something much greater and more incredible and amazing than simply being polite. The true part of the statement is that he does love you as you are, and because he loves you as you are, he won't let you stay the same, because he knows you as you are, and he has something better for you. And I was reminded of the verse in 1 Corinthians 3:18, where Paul says, and we all who with unveiled faces contemplate the Lord's glory. It's kind of a weird wording. It should read more like, and we all who reflect God's glory, all of us who have Christ living in us, are being transformed into his image. If we're attuned to the things of God, we are being transformed by him. He absolutely will change you if you have your eyes on him. It will absolutely change you. He's transforming us into his image. And what does that image look like? Jesus, the image of the invisible God. In other words, God is changing those who follow him to be more like Jesus. If you believe in the Bible, which the history, the facts, my cognitive process tells me is a reasonable thing to believe. If you believe that the Bible is true, that's a reasonable thing to believe. If you believe it, then you know that you have an adversary, Satan. We don't talk a lot about Satan. We don't like to give him too much cred, but it's a real thing. You know that we have an adversary. And there's nothing that would be more perfect for Satan than to get you just one degree off of the path that God has for you. Not 90 degrees, because then you'll get a couple steps down the road and go, whoa, where's Jesus? I better get back over here. But if you go 1 degree off and you just keep walking that way for a little while, guess what? Eventually, you're not going to be able to see Jesus anymore, but it'll happen so slowly that you don't even notice. In fact, I don't know if this was a good idea, but I did it anyway. I read the autobiography of Charles Darwin, and he says, he was a Christian. He was trained in theology. That was his field of scholastic study, and he said that he lost his faith so slowly that he didn't even notice it happening, and once the process was complete, it had happened so slowly that it didn't even bother him once he realized it. Once he realized that he had lost all faith in God, it didn't even matter because it was so slow. That's a perfect victory for Satan in your life. Slowly get your eyes off Jesus, getting him out of sight. This happened just the other day. I was here at the church. I don't remember what day it was. It was in the middle of the week, though, and a gentleman drove into the parking lot and came into the church and seemed like a friendly enough guy, and we had a couple minutes of small talk. And among the things I deduced from the small talk was that he used to be like a traveling evangelist or a traveling preacher or something like that. And after we made just a couple of minutes of small talk, I found out what he really wanted to talk about. He wasn't really that interested in the small talk or me or the church or what was happening. He asked me this very ambiguous theological question, which I know full well. You don't answer those. I know it's a trap. He said to me, do you believe in the two natures? And so, I know, I shouldn't have answered the question, but I said, well, if you mean, do I believe that there's such a thing as a sinful nature and a redeemed nature, then yes, I think those are a real thing. And then it was too late. Then I was reeled in. I should have known that when someone asks you a trap question, I'm about to give you a piece of advice that I probably shouldn't, but when someone asks you a trap question, you don't respond with an answer, you respond with a question. Right? That way you can gather more information. Like, that's just sort of basic, social diplomacy skill. But I took the bait. I said, well, if you're asking, do I believe in the sinful nature and the redeemed nature? Yes, that's true. And then it didn't really matter that I was in the conversation at all. It became extremely clear what he wanted to talk about. Because there's a couple different streams of theology, right? Some people believe that we're born with a sinful nature, and then when we receive Christ, he expels the sinful nature, and we just have a redeemed nature. But some people, some other streams of Christianity believe that the two continue to war within us. So you have kind of these two camps, and he was like playing both parts. And I literally was standing there while he talked. So he went through this process of making like one side really strong case and the other side a really weak case and sound kind of silly and oversimplistic. And then after about 10 minutes, he said, do you agree? And I had wised up by this point. I said, well, I really would have to probably process your original question a little bit more before I could tell you whether I fully agree with everything you said. Most of the stuff he said I did actually agree with, but I didn't want to go farther into it. And he said to me, he leaned right over toward me and he said, well, you better decide what you believe because you're going to stand before God and he's going to want an answer. God's going to want an answer to like which position I take on the two natures. But he was like, boom, firm. He'd obviously been sidetracked from simple devotion to Christ by this peripheral issue. And my response was, it was weird because I was offended, but not like personally offended. Like I wasn't offended by the fact that he like got close to me. I wasn't offended by the fact that he was in my bubble, which is weird for me, as Pastor Rick can tell you. But I was like spiritually offended. And he said, you better decide because you're going to stand before God and he's going to want an answer. And I said, well, I doubt it. But if he did ask me, I know what my answer would be. Thank you for sending your son to die for all my shortcomings and all of the things that I don't understand. And that will be my answer to whatever other question he might have for me as well, if you're wondering. Because what matters is Christ. One of those two streams is right or wrong. But guess what really matters? Jesus. Jesus filled in all the gaps for all of the things that I may not understand. Jesus knows the difference between those two, and maybe they're both wrong. Maybe something else is happening that we don't understand in our finite minds. But what matters is Christ. And what I saw in that situation is that even in both of those situations, with this man and with these two women at the hospital, is that even virtuous things can drag you away from pure and sincere devotion to Christ. Even the things that seem virtuous. It happened to Peter. You might remember this story, Jesus was telling his disciples, hey, I'm going to be crucified. I'm going to die for the sins of the world. The religious leaders are going to arrest me and kill me. And Peter says, over my dead body, essentially. I will never let that happen to you. How much more virtuous can you be than standing up for Jesus? Peter's ready to lay down his life for Jesus. I think we could all agree that's as virtuous as it gets. But do you remember what Jesus said to him? In Matthew 16, 13, Jesus turned and said to Peter, get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me. And here's why. You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns. Peter was virtuous. Peter was right on in terms of virtue. But he was completely missing what God was up to. When we keep our eyes on Jesus, when we contemplate what we know about him, whatever amount that might be, whatever you know about Jesus from the scripture, when we pour our energy and our efforts into bringing all things into unity under the authority of Christ, when we keep our devotion purely and simply to Christ alone and his plans, then we'll know that we have in mind the concerns of God. Even virtuous peripheral things will drag you away. So Pastor Wayne, he shines a light on this problem that often hinders our ability to live the life God has for us. And thankfully, he's a kind man, so he offers up a biblical solution as well, not just the problem. He says that we often long for an encounter with God. We long to see God's hand in our lives. Whether you're a Christian or a non-Christian, I think we all want to know, God, where are you? We all want to see God's hand in our lives, but our hearts and minds get focused on sort of our finite earthly circumstances, the things that are in front of us. I got to pay this bill. We have this sickness. We get focused on these things. And then we look for God to show up in those circumstances and promises, in those circumstances and problems, rather than looking at the promises that God has given us. In other words, let me put it this way. We're looking for God to show up in the form of a solution rather than looking for God to show up in the form of God. Does that make sense? And that's what happened to Peter. Peter was, he was virtuous. He stood up. He was ready to die for Jesus if necessary. But he didn't have his eyes on what Jesus was really up to. Colossians 3, 1 through 3 says this. Since then, you have been raised with Christ. You have been redeemed. You are a co-heir with Christ. Set your hearts on things above where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things above, not on earthly things. For you yourself have died and your life is now hidden with Christ in God. See above the circumstances. See above my own pet issues. See above my own preferences. What did Jesus do? What mattered to him? What was his attitude? I'll tell you one thing that does matter to Jesus, you. And you've got this circumstance, you've got this situation right in front of you. What's his promise? I will never leave you. I will never forsake you. See how God clothes the flowers? See how God takes care of the birds? They don't worry at all, but yet he still takes care of them. My promise is, I will take care of you. I will sustain you. What promises does he make? He goes to great lengths to assure us that he will be faithful to sustain us through every situation to our eternal benefit. So Paul's instructions in the biblical text are this. Keep your hearts on things above. Keep your minds on things above. And I just want to close by reading a paragraph from chapter 4 of Pastor Wayne's book. This is what he said. It's really profound sequence of events. He says, something powerful happens when we focus our hearts and minds on things above. We understand the mind of Christ. When we focus our hearts and minds on things above, we realize what matters to him. And then we begin to act as Jesus acted. We start living out the ministry of Christ. It's not always comfortable or tidy, but life becomes a new sort of adventure. When your heart and mind are set on things above, your actions will follow. When your heart and mind are set on things above, your actions will follow naturally. And that brings us around to just the big idea. Keep things simple. Simplify. Keep it simple. Focus on Jesus, and as you do, you can rest assured that you're on the right track because Jesus is the image of the invisible God. Care about what Jesus cared about, and you'll know you're on the right track because he is the image of the invisible God. Trust in him, and you'll know you're on the right track because he is the image of the invisible God. I hope you'll read chapter 4 this week. I know it will be an encouragement to you. I'm going to ask Pastor Rick to come on up and he can close us out in prayer. Keep things simple. Let it just be about Jesus and see where he'll take you.